I talk a lot about managing energy in my Sunday talks. I'm talking about managing matter, energy, time, and space. But today I want to talk about shame as the starting point. One of the ways I talk about emotions, and I think it's a convenient way, is the scale of 10 different emotional states. There are a lot of words associated with each of these 10 words. I like them because these 10 words are easy to remember, and because they are easy to remember, they have more value because they can be accessed and used by us in given circumstances pretty easily with maybe just 10 or 15 minutes of practicing and familiarization with them. Those 10 states, starting from the bottom and working up, if I were using one form of diagram, which I'll explain in a moment, starting with shame, then above that is apathy, above that is grief, above that is fear, above that is lust, above that is anger, above that is pride, and the top three are courageousness, and then acceptance, and then peace. They're easy to remember if you use this method, SAG, S-A-G, FLAP, F-L-A-P, CAP, C-A-P, SAG, FLAP, CAP. You can recognize, if you will just take a moment in your day, in a given situation, and identify which of those emotional states you happen to be in. And when you're dealing with other people, whether they're employees or bosses or family members or clients or whomever, you can notice pretty quickly what emotional state that they're in. That's very helpful for a couple of different reasons. If there's a great disparity between the emotional state that you're in and the emotional state that somebody else is in, there's going to be a language difficulty, almost as if you guys are speaking a different language. So that's helpful to know. So I use this 10 emotional states, as I said, because it's easy. But there are a lot of other lists out there or scales of emotions. Scientology has a tone scale that they have developed probably for maybe 50 years or so. In it, there are 41 steps and 50 words that describe it. And then, of course, just like in the 10 emotional states, there are a lot of underlying words that are similar. But the scale itself, the tone scale, 41 steps, 50 words. David Hawkins popularized his map of consciousness in his book, Power vs. Force. It's a fantastic book, and the map of consciousness is a fantastic scale. It consists of 17 steps, 6 different categories of concepts, so it's a chart, and 102 words and numbers. Without that chart in front of you, it takes some getting used to. Abraham, of Abraham Hicks fame, has a scale of emotions. In it, they list 22 steps that consists of 28 words as labels. 38 words as labels. And so you can imagine 10 steps, 10 words is a lot easier to use, especially because it's easy to remember with SAG, FLAP, CAP. I diagram these 10 emotional states in a variety of ways, one of which is to draw a ladder, a 10-rung ladder, with shame at the bottom and peace at the top. I think this is useful as an image because it's very easy for people to recognize that as we climb a ladder, our view changes because our viewpoint changes, the place from which we view changes. And so you can recognize as you climb the ladder, you're seeing more things that a person at the bottom of the ladder wouldn't be able to see. We can notice things. We can see more. We can gain more information as we vibrationally go higher. So that's kind of interesting. One of the things that happens as we go up this ladder vibrationally is we experience relief. It gets lighter. It's not so heavy. These energies at the bottom of the ladder tend to be heavier than those at the top, like courageousness, acceptance, and peace. Another way I draw the relationships of these 10 emotional states is to focus on the concept of balance. I think balance is a tremendously important idea in the creation of happiness. When we're out of balance, that's uncomfortable. So to reinforce this idea, what I do is I draw a horizontal line that represents a seesaw. And then underneath it, in about the midpoint, I put a triangular fulcrum that the seesaw is sitting on. And no, that's not unusual. Most children at some point in the Western world, and maybe even in the Eastern world, have seen a seesaw and have played on it and recognize that that fulcrum is a key ingredient in the game of playing of the seesaw. I will bet that most of us have played on a seesaw. Not only have we sat on one end and a friend has sat on the other, but, you know, standing on the seesaw, I bet most of us have done that. So there we are, standing on the seesaw with one foot on either side of the fulcrum, and we're practicing shifting our weights from right foot to left foot to right foot to left foot, and having the ends of the board go up and down accordingly. And so now the question is, what are we doing? What are we doing? We're practicing gaining an understanding about how much we can go out of balance without losing our balance. We like that. We like that. How much can we go in one direction without losing our balance, that is, falling off the seesaw or having the seesaw touch the ground? That's part of the game. Life is like that. We want the excitement that comes from going out of balance without experiencing the pain of losing our balance completely. And not understanding that nuance of going out of balance and losing our balance, the difference there, that distinction, puts people into the position of fighting or fleeing life, trying to hold on, trying to control, trying to avoid anything that potentially could knock us out of balance or have us go out of balance. You'll notice this in life, maybe your own or others, where they only do things that are 100% predictable. No risk, no change, no anything that they can't control completely, they don't want to play. Here's another diagram that I find useful. It's as if I'm drawing a stepping stones on a path. So if I draw stepping stones that move from my left to my right across the paper, not necessarily in a straight line, and in fact, the beginning point is apt to be lower than my finishing point, just because of the vibrational concept. But I'm going to draw six more or less rectangular stepping stones with space in between each one. You can almost imagine paver tiles or tiles out in the garden that are designed for people to step on as they walk through the garden so they don't get their feet muddy. So that's the idea. You could label the leftmost stone shame and the rightmost stone peace, and then label everything in between appropriately. Apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, between shame and peace. And so looking at that, if you would add this one additional element, is off to the side, the right side of peace, draw a box that represents our goal, the thing that we desire. Depending on what we happen to be focused on at any given moment, it could be a dollar sign or a euro sign or some other indication of money, if we're interested in that at that moment, or some representation of health, maybe the word, or some other indicator that we connect to the idea of health. Could be love, a job, etc. I think we have lots of paths going on at any one moment because we've got a lot of desires or a lot of goals. I also use the model of the 12 worlds as a way to more easily see and define ideas that interest us, and also where we devote that is, invest our energy and where our relationships exist. In this case, you could say that there are 12 paths, and the goal at the end of those are the ideals we value related to the spiritual world, the mental world, the emotional world, the physical world, family world, career world, financial world, social world, leisure world, political world, community world, and maintenance world. So if we put any one of those things off to the side, and the ideal in the financial world would be, what, a paid off mortgage, or multimillionaire, or, you know, out of debt, or however we wanted to construct that desire, would go into that box. So there are a lot of, not only those 12 paths, but within them there are a lot of variations as well, a lot of sub-paths, if you will. For instance, if a person wanted a better job, that would be the goal at the end of the career path. And they also wanted a new car, and that would be a goal at the end of another path. And if you wanted to lose 10 pounds of weight off your physical body, that could be a goal at the end of another path. You get it? A lot of different goals there. And that's cool. That's cool. Like most people I know, I use the Bible and biblical quotes when it serves me. There are a lot of translations of the Bible, and even more interpretation of those translations. In Genesis, it says, more or less, that Adam and Eve experienced shame as a result of doing something wrong, that is, disobeying God. So maybe shame, in this scenario, is the starting point for physical experiences for humanity, based upon that. Well, I don't continue quite in that direction. However, I think we can consider a variation on that, and I ask you to consider it too. We were spiritual beings with enormous abilities before we were born into physical form. I think we pre-existed in a spiritual form before we took occupancy of a physical body. And so you can just imagine, if we were spiritual beings and we were not created on the spot, we didn't exist, and we were created at that moment of birth or conception or sometime in there, based upon your beliefs, that we were created out of, I don't know, nothingness? That doesn't work for me, but I guess it's okay. So if we existed as spiritual beings before we became physical beings, you can just imagine, I wonder if I were as limited as a spiritual being as I am as a newborn physical being. Well, if we can make a decision to be born into a physical body, already our decision-making capabilities are advanced over this little teeny baby trying to get its needs met. I think the physical body of a brand new baby is very limited in its capabilities of controlling or being controlled. It's likely that on some level, if we go from the spiritual into the physical, we could notice that we've gone from a highly effective state of being, spiritual, into an extremely ineffective state of being. That is, we're now a physical baby. Here's another aspect of this idea. Shame is represented by the tendency to hide oneself, and that's how it's described or indicated or characterized in Genesis. To cover up, to not be exposed, to hold ourselves back. In some parts of Western culture, the exposure of body parts is seen as, on one level, scandalous, sinful, pornographic, or even worse. Think of this. During childbirth, we require, in the Western world, a woman to lie on her back, not use gravity, which is a natural kind of force to use to facilitate the birth of children, but for the convenience of the medical staff, we have the woman lie on her back, legs spread wide apart, exposing herself to doctors, nurses, other attending people, in most cases strangers, to see parts of her body that if she were to expose those parts of her body on a public beach, she would be arrested and put in jail for. But we have her do that during the childbirth process, not for her benefit, but for the convenience of others. Unless this woman has tremendous self-confidence and a healthy attitude about her body and the process of childbirth, shame at being in this incredibly vulnerable, immodest, in quotes, position could easily trigger the emotion of shame that she's experiencing along with the natural pain that accompanies childbirth. So this baby, in its final moments of being in utero, where it's very impressionable for this first, you know, from its conception to, Bruce Lipton would say, till about six, where it can't filter, is now being bathed in emotions and vibrations of shame as it's entering into the world. I believe that the exposure to those vibrations of shame and others' pain and fear and doubt and whatever else is going on impact the child being born. And if we can't recognize that, I think that's beyond belief that we wouldn't understand or appreciate that. Shame could be the starting point in life for this newborn. Do we start life at the stepping stone of shame? It makes sense to me. Is it bad that we start life in shame? I don't think labeling this starting point as bad or good really serves us very well. If shame is our starting point, we could become more effective just by recognizing that's where we're starting from. That's the starting line. And we're just part of any journey is you start at the beginning, and then you progress. So if we start at that line labeled shame, so be it. And then we just move onward to our goal. If we knew it's a natural state, then we wouldn't have to worry so much about it. Like, I got to be the only person on the planet who's ever experienced this. I'm thinking maybe most of us have experienced this. There are two other points about shame as a starting point. Number one, when we start on any new path toward a new goal, this model could serve us. Number two, the intensity of the shame or any of the other emotions we experience along our path could be based upon our inventory of previous experiences of these emotions. So let me talk about that first one. Learning something new, for instance, or doing something new. As a kind of a justification or a further clarification of that first point, that when we start on any new path toward a new goal, this stepping stone approach from shame up to peace could be a real handy guide. I'd like to know how to play the drums. I really would. Along those lines, I have now for some years owned two drumsticks, also a drum pad and a DVD that demonstrates how to do various drum beats. The first drum beat on the DVD is called a paradiddle. Paradiddle, fun name. On paper, it looks easy. Right, right, left, 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 right, right, left, left, right. Sounds pretty easy. And you would just continue that at varying speeds. That's a paradiddle. When I tried to do this beat the first time, I felt retarded. I had trouble making my hands do these things in harmony with that particular pattern. And I thought, what's wrong with me? I must have some sort of problem or defect or that I can't do this. This should be kind of easy. Can you hear the shame in that? I think I'm broken, defective, bad, missing some naturally occurring element of normalcy. That's shame talking. After a couple of minutes, if I lasted a couple of minutes because of the uncomfortableness or the discomfort of that feeling, I think, oh, this is hopeless. Right, left, 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 right. And I haven't gotten to the nuances that third beat is actually a little bit more dramatic than the first two. So it's right, right, left, 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 right. I haven't gotten there yet. Oh, this is hopeless. This is way too complicated. I can't get my right hand and my left hand to do what they're supposed to do. It's no use. I can't do this. That language is apathy talking. This could make me sad just thinking about the fun and the pleasure that I'm going to lose. Because I can't play this game that other people play, playing a musical instrument, playing a drum, I'm going to lose this. Oh, and not only that, people are not going to be able to notice how cool I am because I can play the drum, because I'm not cool enough to play the drums. This is grief talking. If I'm aware, or if I've been trained to understand that this progression from shame to peace is a normal development, I won't be surprised or devastated by feeling the other steps of fear, lust, anger, and pride. And when I experience courageousness, oh man, this is fun, I'm learning, this is interesting, let me try this, let me try what's after paradiddle, I think I'm getting it, then acceptance and peace, I will know that I'm developing a sense of effectiveness that is very easy to translate into joy. A sense of effectiveness that is very easy to translate into joy. Knowing that the sequence is normal and predictable means that I can enjoy the journey from the very first step instead of feeling, I'm the only one ever to experience shame when I began something new, something I didn't understand, when I start getting engaged with matter, energy, time, or space for the very first time. Something's wrong with me. I'm not the only person that ever felt that. And in fact, this happens virtually every single time we engage in something new. Shame, as a starting point, is simply a phase in our relationship to our goal. The goal, which is over on the end of that line, that diagram, by peace, we can achieve that, but joy on the path is really the underlying goal. And we can understand right from the get-go that, hey, I'm in a phase, I'm making progress. I know I'm in shame. Oh, how interesting. This is cool. Oh, let me go on. Oh, man, this does seem hopeless. Yeah. Oh, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose out. We don't have to be dragged down by these energies. We can tap dance across these stepping stones once we realize they're not as serious or devastating as we thought beforehand. Like any farmer who knows that winter is a phase in the process of agriculture, he's not going to lament wintertime or resist it. You know, he's not going to spend these cold months, it's cold. He knows enough to use winter to prepare for the next phase, springtime. We can do the same thing regarding growing our lives to their full potential. The second point about the intensity of shame or other emotions we're going to experience during our journey to our goals. Let me talk about that a bit. Here are two images. Snow above us on a mountainside that is going to turn into an avalanche and fall on us. The second image is things stored on a high shelf in a closet, that when we connect to them, or we try to touch them or access them, they fall on us because we've disturbed them. The question of intensity can be answered by examining how many shame-filled experiences we have in our inventory on the side of the mountain or hidden away in the closet on that top shelf. how many experiences have we had regarding shame? I would say for those people who grew up in kind, compassionate families where wrong-making or shaming behaviors didn't occur, the avalanche will be minor. It won't overwhelm or dominate. It's like, oh, a little bit of snow. Brush it off and continue. Because of the limited exposure to the pain of shame, that person is liable to have a very low expectancy and fear of and receptivity to shame. It will be easier for this person to move on to the next stepping stone, the next stepping stone, and the next stepping stone, depending on their inventory of emotion-filled experiences in their background. If, on the other hand, the mountainside or closet shelf, those are in quotes, are loaded with shame and shame-filled pain events, it will be more problematic when they get triggered, when we access them intentionally or accidentally. Those shame-filled feelings can crash down on us and we could feel buried. What to do? Two things. One, know this is normal for you and millions of other people. It's not rare. The amount of this energy that's going to tumble down upon us is based upon our previous experiences. And if I said to you, our parents dressed us when we were children, you go, yeah, right, okay, that's pretty obvious. They also dressed us, and so did our older siblings and aunts and uncles and grandparents and other people of our environments. They also dressed us. They dressed us in the emotions that they were feeling when they were standing in our presence. If they were in shame near us, we got dressed in shame. If they were in apathy or hopelessness or depression, we got drenched and dressed in apathy. The same with the rest of these emotions. Step number two. After step number one is know this is normal. Step number two, melt the, quotes, snow away and clean out, quotes, the closet. Melt the snow, clean out the closet. The healing spirit, your connection to a loving God, offers you the power to do that. Most of us, and certainly me, I'm involved in this business, of using energy techniques that range from prayer to intention, to declarations, to the healing codes, emotional freedom technique, tapas acupressure technique, and on, to shift those energy patterns, to melt them, to transform them. This is one of the most exciting and most valuable of all journeys. The journey from where we are to knowing our relationship with our Creator. And the box at the end of the path, past peace, is knowing that relationship. We can enjoy it every step of the way, not just upon arriving at our destination. And the same is true if we're trying to get an advanced degree, build a business, heal illness, becoming prosperous, or anything else. We can use the healing spirit to help carry us from stepping stone to stepping stone to stepping stone to achieve our goal. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the creator of and the connection to all that is, thank you for all of our blessings. Thank you for our increasing awareness of our relationship with you. help us to know the gifts of these emotional states that you have provided in your design of human beings, so that we can use them as energies that propel us forward into our relationship with you. Help us not to fight or run away from the gifts you've given us, not to be in fear of them, but in fact, to use them as gifts of good, which is the only thing you would ever provide us. Thank you. It is so. Amen.